Victory at home was not enough. Beyond Burkina Faso's borders, powerful empires stirred, eager to chain a free nation once again. Traoré stood alone between two worlds. Betrayal or survival. Allies offered gold and shackles. Enemies promised silence or death. In the fire of impossible choices, the lion roared once more, not for conquest, but for dignity. If you haven't already, make sure to follow us and tap the notification bell. We drop new content every day. Stay tuned so you never miss a story. Chapter 8, Between Empires and Allies. The world had tolerated a Captain Ibrahim Traoré when he was just a soldier fighting militants in forgotten villages. The world had even tolerated him staging a coup. After all, Africa had seen many. But when Ibrahim began speaking not just of reform, but of true independence, when he began making moves no puppet government would dare, the smiles in foreign embassies froze, and behind closed doors knives were drawn. It began with a letter, a formal diplomatic note, polite in tone but unmistakable in intent, delivered to the transitional government offices just weeks after Traoré's consolidation of power. From the French embassy, it advised caution. It recommended maintaining historical military agreements. It invited continued cooperation with French forces stationed in Burkina Faso. Under the veneer of diplomacy, the message was clear. Stay in line, play your role, or be abandoned. Ibrahim read it once, folded it carefully, set it aside, and never replied. Instead, he called a meeting, not with foreign dignitaries, but with his own people. Village chiefs, women's associations, union leaders, youth representatives. They gathered in a packed hall under the stifling heat of Ouagadougou's dry season, fanning themselves with scraps of paper, their eyes wary but curious. Ibrahim stood before them, no teleprompter, no scripted speech, and said simply, "Should Burkina Faso remain a prisoner to those who abandoned us?" A murmur rippled through the crowd. A merchant from the north, his hands still calloused from working the fields, rose to his feet. His voice cracked with age and emotion as he shouted, "No, not anymore." Others followed, first a few, then dozens, then hundreds, rising in a rolling wave of voices. "No, no more chains." The next morning, Ibrahim's government issued a stunning declaration. The French military presence in Burkina Faso was terminated immediately. The French ambassador was given 72 hours to leave. All agreements that compromised national sovereignty were under review. The capital erupted in chaotic celebration. Students marched through the streets waving Burkinabe flags. Vendors blared reggae music from battered radios. Old revolutionaries dusted off faded portraits of Thomas Sankara and wept openly in the sun. For the first time since the assassinated dreams of 1987, it felt as if Burkina Faso might finally, truly be free. But freedom, Ibrahim knew, was a hungry beast. It demanded not just defiance, but sustenance. And Burkina Faso, bleeding, starving, and battered, needed new allies if it was to survive. The West, furious at the expulsion of France, began to quietly cut off aid. Sanctions loomed. Loans vanished. The fragile economy, already on life support, began to shudder under the weight of isolation. The old elites whispered that Traoré had doomed them all, that he was leading the country into darkness, that without foreign masters they would perish. But Ibrahim did not bend. Instead, he turned east, and to the Sahel itself. New meetings were held, discreet at first. Russian envoys appeared in the corridors of power, offering weapons, training, economic partnerships, no conditions attached. Meanwhile, Mali and Niger, fellow Sahelian nations under military leadership, sent delegations bearing proposals for a new regional alliance. A confederation of sovereign states, free from ECOWAS dictates, built to defend Sahelian interests with Sahelian hands. It was a dangerous game. The world branded it authoritarianism, destabilization, a drift toward dictatorship. But to the common people of Burkina Faso, the farmers, the herders, the teachers, the soldiers, it felt like something else. A chance to breathe, a chance to stand, a chance to finally decide their own fate. One pivotal night, Ibrahim sat across from a Russian general in a candle-lit government chamber. The Russian, grizzled and shrewd, laid out maps and offers in clipped French. Security assistance, mining partnerships, technology transfers. At the end of the table, an old, cracked photograph sat propped against a bottle of water. A black-and-white portrait of a young Thomas Sankara smiling beside a battered bicycle. Ibrahim glanced at the photograph, then at the maps, then back at the general. His voice, when it came, was ice-edged. We will not trade one master for another. Burkina Faso will walk on its own legs, or not at all. The Russian hesitated, then surprisingly smiled. And nodded. No contracts were signed that night. Only understandings clear, hard, and sober. Burkina Faso would not become anyone's pawn. Not again. Meanwhile, in the villages and streets, the people watched with bated breath. Radio broadcasts replayed Ibrahim's speeches again and again. We are not against cooperation. We are against domination. Our resources are ours. Our future is ours. Our dignity is not for sale. It became a mantra, repeated in marketplaces, whispered over cooking fires, sung by schoolchildren. And slowly, agonizingly slowly, the contours of a new Burkina Faso began to take shape. Local industries revived under national management. Gold mines seized back from foreign corporations. Agricultural projects launched to feed the hungry without foreign imports. Militias armed and trained to defend their own villages without waiting for distant armies to care. It was messy. It was painful. It was slow. But it was theirs. Foreign newspapers painted Traoré as a populist, a dangerous nationalist, a threat to regional stability. They called him arrogant, unpredictable, foolhardy. But inside Burkina Faso, among the women tending new gardens and the boys repairing abandoned schools, he was something else entirely. He was a lion. A lion who had refused the leash. A lion who had chosen the hard road, the lonely road, the righteous road. The people, battered, bloodied, weary though they were, stood a little taller because of it. One evening, as he walked alone along the mossy plateau, the sun setting fire to the vast horizon, Ibrahim stopped and looked out over the land he had sworn to serve. The wind stirred the dust at his feet. Far below, he could hear the distant hum of life. Hammers striking new homes, children laughing, women singing work songs older than memory. He thought of the choices he had made, the friends he had lost, the enemies he had made, and he knew, with a clarity that cut through the weariness and fear, he would rather stand alone in honor than kneel with the world in disgrace. The night deepened, the stars burned cold and bright, and Captain Ibrahim Traoré, son of farmers, child of Bondiqui, soldier of the soil, walked on into the gathering dark. Unbent, unbroken, unafraid.